Tragic, Useless Beauty, Elvis Costello there. The beauty of desperation and fashion he was talking about. The whimsical eye blink of time that it takes for a fashion model to go from most wanted to most ignored. A brisk parade on a runway of time, and then it's all over.
My very first job was for Marshall Field.
If exuberance is beauty, as William Blake says, then this woman qualifies as both exuberant and beautiful. It's model Cindy Crawford on the David Letterman Show back in 1991, talking about her very first modeling job.
And they wanted me to do this bra ad.
All right.
I was lucky enough to, at 16, to already have something to put in it. So,
Paul, are you all right?
I just lost my footing.
Okay?
I'm all right now.
Are you all right?
You can hear there the infantile laughter of men thinking about beauty and sexuality and confusing it all. But then that's the whole idea of fashion, to mix sexuality and classic untouchable beauty in some confused, breathtaking way.
Beauty is the experience of human sensory joy.
This listener seems to have a pretty good handle on all of this beauty, sexuality kind of thing, but this listener, on the other hand, wants to stay away from physical beauty.
Hi, I'm Timothy Cook from Seattle, and beauty is what inspires us to keep going.
My next guest grew up as the daughter of a model that people gawked at on the cover of Vogue and other magazines and on the street. Amanda Filipacchi would even stare at her mother, Ford model Sonia Peterson. Amanda did not inherit her mother's physical attributes. The accident of beauty is a theme in Amanda's new novel, The Unfortunate Importance of Beauty.
I have a sort of love-hate relationship with beauty. I think it's sad how important it is. It's kind of tragic. And yet I myself love it. I can't help it. You know, most people do. I was born in a family of very beautiful people. My mom was a top model, and my dad was also very good looking, and my brother too. And I didn't quite inherit their looks. So it's just a topic that interested me. And I didn't really set out to write a novel about beauty, but I know the classic fairy tales, they don't send a great message. You know, all the girls are always beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
They may be dirty, like Cinderella. They may be poor. Anything is fine, but you have to be beautiful. Otherwise, you're not worthy of a fairy tale. And that's unfortunate.
In your mother's case, was beauty effortless?
Yeah, she was breathtakingly beautiful.
Did you resent her for that?
No. I never had bad feelings at all, or negative feelings or jealousy towards my mother. I was entirely proud of her. There was one time a man I got to know was becoming slightly romantically interested in, and he came over to my apartment, and nothing had happened between us yet, and he was looking up at a beautiful photo of my mom shot by Irving Penn, and he said, "It must be hard to have a mother who's that beautiful." And I said, "No, not at all. It's great. I'm very proud of her." It turns out he was a jerk, and nothing ever happened.
Well, he sounds like a jerk.
Yeah.
Do you think that the beauty that is breathtaking to you, that you experienced in your family, is an absolute sort of immovable classic beauty, or is a function of society, context, you know, the things that, you know, we're marketed to believe are beautiful?
Well, it's hard to know, because I think our tastes do get influenced. Like, I remember growing up, thick lips on women weren't considered particularly attractive. And I didn't consider them particularly attractive. And then as the years went on, that became very beautiful. And now I find them very attractive. We get influenced, I think, our taste in beauty. But nevertheless, there's something very interesting. I think it's also biological, because the cousin of Darwin, who was an anthropologist in 1883, he wanted to see if there was a difference between typical faces of vegetarians and typical faces of criminals. So he superimposed photographs of faces of vegetarians, and what he discovered was beauty. When you average out people's features, different people's features, you end up with a beautiful face. And it's a kind of a mind-blowing thought, because that's the last thing we think of normally as beauty.
Although the Greeks would say, no, beauty is this ideal, this aspirational ideal, and that the sculptures that represent beauty in ancient Greece and in classical sculpture can never be found in the actual faces. And there are sculptures of actual faces from Greek and Roman times, and they're filled with, you know, specific moles and weird little spots that are specific to a particular individual. So what of this quality of beauty that's idealistic?
Well, you know, different people have different opinions. I'm not sure that the ideal Greek beauty is exactly our taste anymore.
Although we look at some of those sculptures, like, you know, David, and mm-hmm. not bad.
Yeah, not bad. I've seen better.
mean, you're very well advanced. Yes.
I mean, you know, in some of our actors nowadays, you know, I find some much better looking than David. But and that's just a question of
who, for instance?
Probably my favorite all time, but this was from years ago, was Cary Hughes from The Princess Bride.
Oh.
Yeah.
Do you think we all have a type that we're associated with who's our kind of ideal beauty person?
Based on my experience of myself, I would say no. I've gone through phases, you know.
But in those individual phases, you had a type.
Yeah, but then there have also been time. I mean, after a certain point, I think my phases stopped. I no longer had a type or a phase, you know. I just was able to appreciate different types of people, different types of men. And another thing that I think is interesting is that I think women are able to fall in love with men sometimes for their talent. How often do you ever hear this happening the other way around? When do men ever fall in love with a woman because of her talent? I think that's too bad. You know, it's very sad for women.
What do you think of the fashion industry? Does it conceal or reveal beauty?
Probably both. I mean, I used to be fascinated by beauty. As a teenager, I would do airbrushed posters of my mother's modeling pictures and things like that. So I can understand, you know, the lure and people's love of it. But I was thinking recently, you know, if retouching of models on covers didn't exist, I think perhaps everyone would appreciate each other more.
Have you ever tried to use makeup and to do it in a way that makes you look fundamentally different and to basically put on a disguise that is someone who's just knocked down beautiful?
I used to wear makeup and I used to believe in makeup. I used to really feel that it could make anybody look beautiful. And then after a certain age, when I was about 30 and I had to start wearing glasses, I thought, oh, well, forget about the makeup. What's the point if you have to wear glasses? The glasses ruin the whole effect anyway, so forget the makeup. And then actually there, too, my taste changed. And over the years, I started finding women who don't wear makeup more beautiful. Even beautiful blonde women, I actually think they look better without makeup.
Do you think we have control of beauty or beauty has control of us?
Both, but probably beauty has control of us more than the other way around. It would be good if we could make efforts to free ourselves a little bit of that, to sometimes try to see beauty in people, you know, give them a chance, sort of let it be an acquired taste. Our society always talks about inner beauty, that's what counts, all that, but we fail.
Well, Amanda Filipacchi, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Amanda Filipacchi is the author of The Unfortunate Importance of Beauty.